Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Spring is in full effect, and as you get yourself ready for the season, your home needs to do the same. Big projects or small, you want to spruce up your surroundings. So how do you do it without breaking the bank? Interior design experts are joining me tonight. Noel Benitez is the owner of Unparalleled Eye Designs, and Nikki Clue is the founder and principal designer with the Nikki Clue Design Group. Well, the experts are in. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call right now. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Noel, Nikki, thank you both for joining the conversation.
Pleasure. Thank you so much for having us.
Okay. So look, Noel, let me start with you. How do you revamp or refresh your living space for the spring season? Because a lot of people sometimes just don't think about doing it. You know, it's just we outside and we're done and we're leaving the house just where it is, right. You know. So, you know, where do you start, Noel?
So, thank you.
Sure.
You can start in a couple of different places. If you'd like to keep it a little simplistic, you can start, of course, by bringing in some fresh flowers. Fresh flowers can be easily and economically sourced from Trader Joe's, Costco. You know, sometimes depending on the neighborhood that you live in, you might see some entrepreneurs that are selling some fresh flowers, you know, on the corner because it's just the springtime and they're available. So that's one way to start, is adding in some nice fresh bouquets. Another way is to take a look at things like your pillows and throws, and if there's a way that you can switch over from some of the warmer textures to some of the cooler textures, like you take the wool pillow out and you pop in maybe the cotton pillow or throw, and you're creating soft surroundings around you that start to conduct more of the coolness versus the heat, another simple way. And then if you want to take it a few notches, you could try something like switching out drapery. So some of the heavier drapes, velvet and whatnot, can be switched out for linen and gauze, even area rugs. You know, you can roll up the warmer season rugs and lay out something that's a little bit cooler. So there are several levels to it, but there's always a way to create that springtime impact.
Gosh, I didn't even think about the drapes. That didn't occur to me. So, but here's the thing, Nikki, if you do that for the spring, and so you move your winter stuff out, you move your spring stuff out, I mean, bring your spring stuff in, are you kind of switching back between last winter and the spring before, or do you just, you know, keep replenishing year after year after year? That sounds like it could be a little expensive.
I would suggest doing it like you do your holiday decor. So organize it in a fashion where everything has a home, whether it's in your garage, a storage shed, or in the attic, and it's boxed up appropriately and labeled so that you can find it when you need it. And just like with, say, Christmas decorations, each year you might add that one new special ornament or garland, and you continue to build on your collection and maybe remove some things that are older or worn. I would do the same thing with your switch out for between seasons in your decor as well.
You said box them up correctly. What do you mean by boxing them up correctly?
Yes, you want to make sure that if you, depending on where you live in the country, if there's moisture, that you're putting things in there so that the moisture can be collected. So you know those little packets when you get a package, you've been waiting for this package from, say, one of your favorite online retailers, and it's wrapped in its packing. There's that little silicone packet in there. That's so that when it's shipped, any moisture from overseas in a, you know, in a barge is not going to ruin your new clothing. So you want to wrap things that need to be done individually, and you can use felt bags for things that are breakable. There's lots of different tips and tricks so that your things can stay new looking each time you pull them out from storage.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about your spring home spruce up, changing the interior so that things will look seasonally appropriate. You know, winter's gone, spring is here. So you want to lighten up just a little bit. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Courtney, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Courtney. What's on your mind?
Hey, y'all. This question is for Noelle. This is Courtney, a.k.a. Court Dog.
Hey, Court.
It's Court Dog. Okay.
Hey, Court. Yes. Hey. Great person here.
So I wanted to know, you know, I'm not very good at interior design, but I know that you are. So do you suggest for, like, if you have a couch that is, like, a dark blue, do you suggest, like, buying a cover to change the, you know, change the tone of the living space? Or what do you suggest, like, if you have a couch, you don't want to, can't buy another one, you can't switch it? Do you suggest buying a cover, maybe adding some plants to the area? What do you suggest for areas?
Yes, so thank you for that question. Me personally, I'm not sure how Nikki feels. I'm not really a big fan of covers. So if you do have a darker piece of furniture, you can always consider moving accent tables with a good bright lamp next to it, and then also contrasting that deeper rich color with much lighter pieces. So if you are someone that likes neutrals, I would juxtapose that with maybe some whites, some ivory, again, some of that like linen vibe. If you're someone that's into color, I could see anything from a coral, a yellow. You can even pop it with some black and white, some interesting patterns. But I would just try my best to create some high contrast against that darker sofa.
Okay, good advice. Thank you.
Courtney, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about interior design, changing with the season, but not breaking the bank, whether you have a big project or a small project, or you just don't know what to do. Give us a call. The experts are in at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. So, Nikki, I have a question for you about, this is a little bit bigger, about painting. A lot of people figure, why not do something new? Say you want to paint. Let me ask you this. What is in for kitchen color and design this year that you can do without buying a new $4,000 refrigerator or $2,000 dishwasher or something like that?
Right. Well, actually, in contrast to what we're talking about, what I've been seeing in kitchen design is a lot of darker colors. So black cabinets with dark wood is really popular right now. I don't know if that's something you'd want to do for spring. However, I will say that this is the best time to remodel a kitchen for the very fact that you can now grill outside or, you know, have lighter fare meals while that kitchen remodel is happening.
What do you think about changing cabinet faces? A friend of mine did that a couple of years ago, and it really, really looked good, where instead of buying new cabinets, she had somebody come in and they took the cabinet faces off the doors, took the knobs off, and they, I guess they dipped them. Good idea, bad idea, Nikki?
That's a way to do it with the dip. Now, I have not done it that way. The way we always prefer is a three-step lacquer process where you sand it and then you do primer and then you spray it. So dipping is new to me.
I say dip, you say three-step lacquer process. That's what I meant.
Inventing new terms.
That's right. That's exactly what I meant. Yeah, so the good old three-step lacquer process.
But yes, that is the perfect approach when you're not reconfiguring the kitchen cabinets, when they're all staying in the same location, but you want a new look, then absolutely take those doors off. Get rid of that old 80s arch and get something more modern and square and paint the frame, get new doors and paint them the same color, and it looks like you have a brand new kitchen.
Okay. Very true.
Your thoughts about that, Noelle?
Oh, yeah, I concur. Another consideration as we switch out frames, you're right, get rid of that archway that really can date the place significantly. also consider maybe doing some clear glass panel, some clear glass panes. Now, mind you, that does tie the person, the owner of that kitchen, to always sort of maintaining some super, super neat interior shelves because it's see-through. But, you know, one way, and I'm not sure if how you feel about different dishes, but for me, Nikki, I like to see these days like simplistic white dishes in essentially any sort of background, because you allow some other cool pops to come in, whether it's lemons or some Moroccan style backsplash or something like that. But glass cabinetry on a couple of them could also be a thought for some people. It's a personality thing, but it works.
Yeah, I would imagine, Nikki, that you don't want to have things, if you decide to go with glass cabinetry that you can that you can see through, you do not necessarily want to have dishes that are looking raggedy.
Absolutely not. I agree with Noel that that is definitely a lifestyle choice. If you have young kids and, you know, got all the cups and everything going on, then that might not be for you. But if you like the look, a way to overcome that is to do frosted glass with something, with a cabinet that's backlit, or even seated glass so that it just kind of obscures the things that are behind them. But a couple of doors with glass and lighting is actually a good tie into spring. It helps liven up and lighten up the space with that approach.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about interior decorating, what you can do as the seasons begin to change to perhaps lighten things up, to change things around and to make them look different, just to lighten the mood. If you have a comment or a question, the experts are in at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. So while I need to take advantage of having these experts here, so I have a beautiful couch. It is a it's a cotton velvet burnout couch, and it's with the design is paisley, but it's dark green. But and it's the cushions are feather stuffed. Okay, but you know with the I want to change that into foam rubber. But here's my question, Noelle. How do I know that I'm getting the best kind of foam rubber without someone essentially trying to rip me off? I mean, it's foam rubber. How expensive can it be?
You know, foam rubber is not, let's just say I'm still doing research. So, Nikki, if you can enlighten Harold on this one, I'm
okay, well then, Nikki, if you're the foam rubber expert.
But you're wise to ask about your sofa right now.
Yeah, why not? You know, what do I do? I mean, the prices vary wildly on the internet.
Right, right. So there's different thicknesses and there's also different gives. So imagine just a little cheap foam cushion you might get from a kitchen chair cushion. You know, it gives really easily. It doesn't hold up. Versus what you would do with like maybe a sleep foam mattress. Those are a lot more dense. Mm-hmm. And so that's where you're going to find your quality, how it's made, the denseness of it, the thickness of the actual piece of foam. Those are the things that are going to contribute to the cost of that sofa. So I would definitely talk with your salesperson, and if they aren't, you know, versed in what you're paying for, then I would move on to the next one so they can actually explain to you why you're paying the higher cost.
Right.
Everybody stay with us, including Sheena calling from Virginia. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are going to take a break, but don't forget you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast on WHUR.com. If you're on the phone, stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM, Channel 141 and 96.3 HD2. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm. That's on WHUR. We'll be back on SiriusXM, Channel 141 in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight, we are talking about that spring spruce up for your home. Time to lighten up the dark winter design and do something a little special without breaking the bank. My guests are Noelle Benitez. She is the owner of Unparalleled Eye Designs, and Nikki Clue is the founder and principal designer with the Nikki Clue Design Group. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Sheena, calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Sheena, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you.
Sure, go right ahead.
Yes, my question is, I just moved into a new home, and I have a chocolate leather sectional, and my back wall, my walls are light gray, and my floor is a dark gray. So I wanted to ask Nikki, what colors did she suggest? Because she mentioned flowers. So what colors would she suggest that I get as far as I wanted to spray them? So what would be the color that you would choose with a chocolate brown sectional?
Are you talking about artificial flowers?
Yes.
Okay. Nikki, go ahead and take a shot at it, and I'll ask Noelle as well.
There is a yellow flower that I love, and it's like a boxwood. It's not a dandelion, but it has a really beautiful bloom from the tip all the way down, and you can just fan them out and have a gorgeous arrangement. I'm thinking yellows with grays and chocolate looks really, really good together. Mm-hmm. If you find other items that can bring in those three colors, say in curtains or any other fabric that you can make into pillows, that would be a really pretty color scheme.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Sure. Noelle, your thoughts about that?
Nice. Well, I absolutely concur with the colors that Nikki suggested. If we were going to weave in a bit more, again, this is sometimes it's, you know, more personality based, but you could certainly try a note of peach in there. You could mm-hmm. certainly try a note of we've got the peach happening. I've got the chocolate. You know, we don't want to go too strong with like the blues, but you could essentially attempt maybe like an aqua or a teal. But I could definitely see like the peach, the yellow, the lighter gray, and then also bringing in some white could work.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Sheena, thank you so much. And by the way, congratulations on your new home.
Thank you so much.
You're quite welcome. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Okay, Noelle, let us talk about the thing that so many people really, really struggle with, where it can be beautiful or it can be an absolute disaster. Wallpaper.
Oh, right.
Yeah, wallpaper. I remember a friend of mine years ago who has just exquisite taste. I mean, everything that she did was just fantastic. And she did a faux leather wallpaper that mm-hmm. It was magnificent. Vanessa, shout out to you, sis. But when I thought about something like that for my home, the thing that I was most concerned about was the house settling. I live in an older home, for example, in mm-hmm. an older neighborhood. My house is 85 years old. And so over the course of the years, you will notice as the house settles that you may see a very slight, you know, crack in the paint. It's very, very subtle. But, you know, what other kinds of problems do people deal with when it comes to applying, you know, wallpaper? Because some of that stuff, again, it's not cheap.
That part is true. The cool thing about, you know, as everything modernizes, you are seeing a lot more peel and stick wallpaper, which you can get to some pretty high-end looks and still have it be peel and stick. So you don't necessarily have to have that deeper commitment to application time. And also, you don't have to feel as tied to it, because if you wanted to peel it off 2 years down the line and either try another or just paint fresh paint, then you could certainly do that. Wallpaper is, I mean, you know, and I know, and Nikki knows that it's coming back, but some people actually still have to be convinced about it altogether, because you'd be surprised the type of conditioning people have from, like, oh, I remember my great auntie's house in this place. You know what I mean? It's like, right. For some reason, there's like this association with like wallpaper and then like it coming back. So I would say sticking with the peel and sticks are nice, and then trying to find something that's going to be like, I'm a big fan of something that's abstract, and how can you get to like sophistication and abstract. Regarding some of the settling, I think that some of those imperfections are just one of those inevitabilities in life. I mean, even if you look at the idea of something being 100% perfect and 100% aligned, mm-hmm. is actually not even realistic in nature. So I guess it's sort of like some of those settling moments you have to kind of take. Of course, you want to make sure that you are lined up as much as possible. So you want to have someone that applies it, that's going to be diligent about how they're lining up patterns, because you'd be surprised if misaligned a pattern could stand out more than some settling going on.
Yeah, I feel like I'm in interior design therapy just now.
Well, right, Nikki, it's a part of it. The therapy is just like a B-side of what we do.
I like that. Go ahead,
Nikki. Totally agree. I would tell my husband, I didn't know I was signing up to be a marriage counselor.
Right. How about that?
Some of these projects.
You know, I mean, you get into your house and you're like, I'm leaving you, house, because you're not treating me right.
I would also add one more tip or trick for wallpaper application is to find the background of that paper, select a paint color to match, and then paint all of the walls that color. And what that prevents is when those seams do have a little bit of a hairline crack appearing, it'll just blend right in because the wall color behind it is also the background of the wallpaper. So yes, that's what we always do. And yes, wallpaper is all the rage. I just installed a project last week where we did wallpaper on the ceiling, wallpaper behind the bookcase shelves. It just is so creative and fun to use now.
Yes.
It has so many different options.
About painting, Nikki, what brand do you like and why?
So it's regional. With some places you can get Sherwin-Williams, and other places you can't. And so because we work across the country, it really is depending on that particular city. But I love Sherwin-Williams. They have a great application and finish, a one coat, mm-hmm. and you can always get the color to match. Say you need an extra gallon 2 years later to do some touch-up, it's going to match, whereas some of the other brands, maybe not so much. Mm-hmm. Benjamin Moore is also a really great quality paint. And those are my top two.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Noelle?
I totally agree. I tend to start with Benjamin Moore, and it's true from the regional aspect. The nice thing is both of these companies do offer trade discounts. So unless you get the Aura in a quarter gallon and then they just want to charge you full price. But I find both of them to have very rich colors, and Benjamin Moore, I have to agree. I have looked into Farrow and Ball, but you know, it's like, as there's so much more to the application process, and I mean, truth be told, I find like I achieve some stunning colors with what's being mm-hmm. offered to me from those two options.
When you have somebody,
go ahead. I would like to add, when Farrell and Ball is considered, I consider that one when I have a really soft color mm-hmm. that I don't want to get too juvenile. So they have really deep, rich light and blues and pinks that still feel really, really elegant and not too, like, I guess,
yes, super childlike. Right. Now, that is definitely a very super tip.
So, and I'm going to stay on this paint thing, because some people just decide, hey, look, why not go ahead and invest? If you decide not to do it yourself, Noelle, and you decide to hire someone, what kind of questions do you need to ask them? Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, you know, of course, with us, we work with our team. So the good thing is we make our expectations known. But you're saying, what type of questions might someone want to ask a painter?
Right. Exactly. I mean, one coat, two coats, three coats. Because when I had my dining room done. I mean, I was like a helicopter parent, you know.
Even
though these were professionals and they kind of understood what it was that I was looking for, but again, this is the only home that I have, just like so many other people. It's just
you
like,
cherish it. Yes.
Yeah, you cherish it, and you want to make sure that it's, you know, that it's done, you know, right. And so, you know, what should we be asking, you know, painters when they come into our house?
You know, of course, knowing the experience is obviously helpful. There's a lot of times you get it from word of mouth, or maybe you've read some good reviews, so that's a good way to start. Understanding their process, and then, you know, making sure that everyone is clear on which colors are going where, you know, doing some post-its, doing some labels, getting an understanding from them of the time frame. And then I would say most of the time you're gonna at least do two coats of paint. That's just, even you could spend really good money on like that top paint with all the good primer and everything in one, like Aura is an example, and you almost always still have to go to that other coat, especially if you're doing a saturated color like black or like a Cabernet or something like that. And then also, if, you know, I have worked with painters that don't necessarily use painter's tape, and I've seen them do a really beautiful job. So in the event that if you see the team, they're moving forward and they're not using painter tape, I just think it's like critical as a consumer to like let any team know that, maybe similar to the helicopter, that you are particular, you like things done a certain way. So if you like lay out your expectations in a really strong way, most people I think would like to do it right first, mm-hmm. instead of having to double back. And if you know that this person is going to fine tooth comb some things, you might just hit the nail on the head from the jump, which we should be practicing anyway, but you know, sometimes people put a little bit of a fire under you. But those are some of my tips. Mm-hmm. And it
does sound good, because I was happy with the job that was, you know, that was done. But again, I did feel a little overbearing.
At least you're admitting that.
Yeah, I mean, I am admitting, because, you know, I'm you know, generally I'm kind of like, you know, you're the professional, I'm going to let you do your job. But this was kind of a very first project for me, and so I was kind of in a nail biting, you know, posture. And mm-hmm. and to that point, Nikki, when you do have somebody coming in, you know, how do you balance that nail biting posture with the fact that, you know, hey, I'm Nikki Clue, I've been doing this, I know my job, so you go sit down somewhere.
If it's the client you're asking, if they're still really nervous and we're handling the job, I just reassure them, anything that happens, like something's going to go wrong. Like, I can guarantee you something's going to go wrong, but I'm going to take care of it for you. I'm going to advocate for you. We're going to find a solution. You're going to love it in the end. Just let me worry about the contractors and talk with them directly. Mm-hmm. So that's what we tell our clients. Like, let us be your advocate and your intermediary, so you don't have to deal with all that stress and drama. But what we do with our painters is we ask, you know, who is the foreman? Who's going to be on site? Because the owner is not always the one that's actually doing the work, right? So mm-hmm. you want to, when you get your bid, not only know the owner that's giving you the quote, but who is the foreman for that particular job, and then also how they're going to prep. And so that's when you'll know if they plan on using painter's tape to do the cut-ins, and are they going to take the handles off of the doors? Are they going to leave them on and try to paint them around them? So those are little details that you ask ahead of time, and if they give you the answer you want, great. If they don't, maybe you can negotiate and say, well, this is how I'd like it done. Is that okay with you? Are you comfortable with that? Will the price stay the same? Mm.
Right. And if I could just add in, so the process, I would say, is maybe 25%, if we're going to keep the numbers straightforward. But truly, the color that is being applied to those walls is what sometimes the biggest conundrum is. So that's why it is important to, in some cases, if you think that it's worth it, to reach out designer, because you cannot sort of solve the riddle of the color for that wall, it's mm-hmm. worth the cost of paying for a consultation, because people could, you know, the team could do a beautiful, close to flawless job all day, but if the color is not the color, you're just going to see one huge flaw and not like all the great painting that's been laid forth. So,
and you're looking at that tiny little tip, right, at the paint store. It's like 1 by 2 inches. You really should paint a big, you know,
2 feet by 2 feet square on your wall, and potentially on different walls depending on how the sunlight comes into your room, so that you really get an understanding of what that color is going to do once it's in your full room.
And you know, one of the difficult things I think for painting is when you have the color samples. What do you call them? The little squares.
Samples.
Little
yeah.
You mm-hmm. and you have 50 shades of gray, okay?
Truly.
or 550 shades of gray. And
more accurate.
Exactly. And even though, you know, for my experience, it came out just the way I wanted it. But even when you go from 50 to 5 shades of gray, because you just have these little squares that are 4 inches by 2 inches or what have you, and you hold them up, it's really, really hard to imagine the entire wall with that color. And I would imagine the worst thing in the world is deciding on a color, finishing it, and then saying, that's not it.
Like, mm-hmm. I went into a client's home, and he was like a young bachelor guy, and he was like, I had every wall painted gray, but he had not realized there was such a significant lavender hue underneath that gray. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, this is a lavender house. So some of the tricks, I will admit, some of the renderings online don't necessarily still depict the accurate color. So one thing I would encourage people to look at is, what are the undernotes of this color? Does it read sage? Does it read more blue? Does it read more of like a white gray? And so knowing what that undertone is can actually really help you decide, okay, I like this color. I've read that the notes are blue, which is something that I'm okay with. So there's a lot of times when it's just like, when you narrow it down to 5 from 500, you have to kind of say, let's sample and paint it on, and then at one point you make a decision. But knowing what those undernotes are, and then you can also change the saturation. So knowing that you have some power in the control of the formulation can be helpful.
Change the saturation. Explain that, please.
So you can have a certain color, and it's almost like a matter of opacity. So you can say, I like this color, but can I have 80% of this color? So whatever the magic is they do to take out some of that depth, but you still have this same note, is pretty much the idea. I don't know if it's compared to like a less spicier dish. I always will take it as spicy as possible, so you're never going to hear me asking for less spice. But and then I'm sure Nikki probably has some cool tips regarding how we can have some power about the formulation of the color.
Mm. Nikki, what do you think about different colors for different rooms in smaller homes? Obviously, you know, when you have large, if you have a McMansion, or mm-hmm. you know, you live in a brand new, newly designed house, you know, you can have different color rooms because there is space for that. But when you have perhaps a smaller house, going from living room to dining room, do you recommend different colors without it looking crazy? I know everybody's going to say, well, it depends on your different taste, but I'm quite sure I'm sure that both of you have, you know, given a client what they want. And then when you leave there, you know, the first thing you want to do is take 4 Advil because your head hurts their taste is less than desirable.
Well, because I love color,
ditto. Yay.
I would say you absolutely can add different colors, even in a small home. But the trick is to keep the intensity of that color similar throughout. So just like Noelle was saying with saturation, if you have this like really bold color next to a softer color, that is jarring. And so it will feel like, you know, you're going around in a circus house. So, but if you have soft shades throughout or bold shades throughout, keeping that same intensity helps bring some uniformity to the space. And with that, if you're doing bold throughout, then I would say less color versus the softer tones. It gives you a little more leeway to use more colors.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I agree with that.
Chandeliers.
Mm-hmm.
you know, they seem to be, for a lot of homes, to be very much a centerpiece in for dining rooms or for, you know, perhaps, you know, family rooms. But they can really be extremely expensive and even more expensive to install. What are your thoughts about chandeliers, Noelle?
So chandeliers are, I mean, I even love the word chandelier. They really can be a gorgeous, gorgeous focal point, even, you know, especially like that foyer. Because a lot of times when people, even in nice builds, you do have sometimes this cookie cutter style light fixture. So you can allow your personality to actually come to life via a light fixture. I know that seems like a reach, but Nikki knows exactly what I'm saying, I'm sure. Now, it's true. They absolutely, absolutely run the gamut. So from a designer perspective, working with clients, you know, we tend to look into our great trade accounts and find beautiful fixtures that are going to like really nail it. But for people that are taking on projects on their own, you can absolutely search different websites everywhere from the Wayfairs, the Overstocks of the world, even popping into it, there's a really cool store called HomeSense, and they actually have light fixtures that are completely constructed. They even sell it with the light bulb. So there's ways to get to a high-end looking fixture that's a reasonable price. Also, check Etsy and eBay. You'd be surprised with those some of those designer looks you get for a fraction of the cost. Regarding installation, you're right. It can get a little costly, but that word of mouth, like, working with electricians, I mean, some people have even YouTubed and installed on their own, which always impresses me.
Yeah, I'm impressed, too. I'm not messing around with electricity.
Yeah, I'm going ahead. Come on over. You know, my father, he has loads of skills and can do it, but he's not going to necessarily come up to Atlanta from Atlanta for a light fixture. So, you know, and, you know, everyone deserves to get their paid their worth, but I'm not trying to take away money from anyone, but if you know that you've got a couple projects coming up and you find a person that can come in and install, don't be afraid to do a little bit of wheeling-dilling. Hey, I'm going to do this and see, hey, can we knock this out for $150, and then from there I'll have more for you later, you know? So it's okay. We can kind of stand in that a little bit and say if we see if we can come up with good flat rates that's going to like satisfy all the way around. So, but there are some great online sources. Even Ballard Design, it gets a little bit more high end, but it's not a $1,200 light fixture. So,
what's your chandelier pitch, Nikki? Your thoughts about them?
I think it can make or break a space. So with every design, we're looking for that one piece, one or two pieces that just scream, you know, everything that we're trying to create for that space, and then scale back on some of the other pieces. So chandelier is definitely one of the spaces we do that in. Gosh, I can't downsell a chandelier.
I know.
I can't.
Right, Nikki? It's so like, am I talking to a client or am I talking to the audience?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, it's right there at eye level. It's one of the first things you see when you walk into a space oftentimes. And so I think it's worth a splurge. And then you can look on, say, TaskRabbit for someone that is maybe new to the area or just getting their business started. And so they're looking to get more clients that can come in at a better rate than someone that's been doing it for 20 years. And this is a tiny little job for them. They're probably overpricing because they don't want to do it.
I did find a really great electrician to install my chandelier in the dining room on TaskRabbit. And he was on time. It took an hour. And he charged me $100.
Wow.
Right. That's a great
deal. Yeah, that's a deal.
So now we've talked about the do's. Nikki, I'll start with you when it comes to sprucing up your home, big project or small. Let's talk about the don'ts. What are your don'ts for clients?
So don't think that you can, you know, plan something one weekend and get it all done the next weekend. Like, really take your time.
Good one. Good one.
Right. And get all your materials prepped, get all your people lined up, and then approach it. It takes so much planning, and I think that's, you know, where the value of hiring an interior designer comes in, because we know all the steps that need to be taken, and we can calm you down and say, I get it. I know you wanted this 2 years ago, but let me do it this the right way, and when it's done, you're going to love it because we haven't rushed through anything or skipped any steps.
Yes, yeah. I concur.
What are your don'ts, Noelle?
So let's see here. For some of the don'ts would be Some of the don'ts would maybe be kind of, it kind of plays into a little bit of timeline. So if you feel like if the investment is there and the will is there, I would say don't hesitate on reaching out to the resources, whether it's reaching out to a designer or reaching out to the people that you know can bring the project together. Kind of move on that sooner than later, because a lot of times when people get something complete, they look back and say, gosh, why did it take so long? So that's something that I can encourage. And then faith in the process. So if you feel like you want to sort of be a super helicopter or second guess a lot, like see if you can really like trust the process. And I know that's more of a do than a don't, but you can sort of look at like the reverse question of that. Another good one would be probably don't necessarily feel like you have to follow the trends that you see. Let your own personality come out in it. And even if it sounds like, okay, this isn't going to go together, that won't go together, speak to a professional, because you'd be surprised the way we can like weave a really cool story based off just your life and your highlights and your likes. And we can make that work. So don't hesitate on sharing your taste and your style, because you'd be surprised the story that can come from it in your home.
That really sounds interesting, because you know everybody, you know, they want their house to look like it's town and country, or better homes and gardens, or what have you, and so instead of thinking about what it is that they want, because you are the professional, they may ask, well, because I'm sure you had clients say, well, what do you think?
Right, and I love that question. but there's times, and Nikki knows, like, that what do you think? It's like, I think a couple of things, but I have to extrapolate a couple of more things out of you to know where I need to step next. Because so many looks, so many textures and elements are achievable just on the face of like, we're professionals and we know what we're doing. So if you see that I use a lot of bold color, but you say, I had two clients, lawyers, wonderful people, and they were like, Noelle, we are both type A. Like, we're not even gonna hide that. So, but we want our house to still have this texture dynamic. So I took what they said and still was able to flip it around and offer them, you know, churn out something that worked for them and they were very excited about. But at the same time, their parents could come in the house, their siblings could come in the house and say, oh, this is you guys. It's elevated, but it's absolutely you. So that's always my goal, is like people come in and say, this is you. You didn't do it, but it's you.
Yeah, because I was just thinking, Nikki, that if you may have your own particular taste. How do you keep your taste? How does Nikki keep Nikki's taste out of the way of what a client wants? I'll let you have the last word on that.
We have to be very client-centric. There are so many styles out there and available. So clients kind of get overwhelmed with all the different options. And what we are able to do is isolate the different inputs. So, you know, not thinking of any space in particular, what are your favorite colors? What are your favorite wood tones? What are your favorite metal tones? And then we show an array of different styles and let them identify what's drawn to them. Also, what's helpful is knowing what they don't like.
Yes.
And so we can stay away from that. And then, like Noelle was saying, personality type, that's really good. That helps steer a design direction. Knowing some of their family history, knowing their profession, their favorite places to travel. I also look in their wardrobe. I like look and see at the
yes.
styles and fashions that they wear. So we, you know, take all these different inputs. Sometimes it feels like we're lawyers and we're like grilling you because we really want to know what's in your head and your heart so that we can pull that out of you and create a space that's ideally and uniquely yours.
Noelle Benitez and Nikki Klug, thank you so much for talking to us. I really enjoyed this, and I'm going to take all of these tips, wrap them all together, and throw it in my house and see how it works out.
I love that you love design, Harold. Thank you for having me.
You should see his shirt, Nikki. This would be an example of looking at the client's wardrobe.
Hey,
it's very
there
nice.
You go. This old thing? Right. That is the Daily Drum for this Thursday, April 13th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.